Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
What is going on, Diesel Nation? We're excited to have you guys with us today on the Diesel Podcast. If you're watching this on YouTube and aren't subscribed, make sure and click the subscribe button. Turn on notifications, like, comment, let us know what you think about the episode. If there's any suggestions you have for a topic or a guest, we're always checking YouTube. Love to get your guys' feedback and then also be able to incorporate that into future episodes, or to ask guest questions if it's, you know, something you want to know about a particular truck or part or, you know, something going on in the industry. We'd love to be able to do that. On today's episode, I'm going to be chatting with Ethan from WP Developments and asking him the question, is there one transmission to rule them all when it comes to holding power, performance, options, and really reliability, you know, as well with these higher power numbers? So I'm looking forward to his answer and then also understanding why, if there is one that does kind of lead the pack, you know, what allows it to do it. So it's going to be a great chat. Really looking forward to it. Before we get to it, though, I want to remind you guys, our friends over at Kershaw Knives have a 20% off code for you. Use code 20diesel at kershaw.kaiusa.com. You get 20% off site-wide. They've got a ton of choices, different options. If you need something for, you know, EDC or hunting, fishing, something around the job site, something to just throw in a toolbox, something to work hard, they've definitely got you covered with a bunch of choices to meet any budget. So if you're in the market, head on over, check it out, save some money. All right, let's get to today's episode with Ethan from WP Developments and asking the question, is there one transmission to rule them all when it comes to holding power, going fast, and then being reliable while it's being done? Ethan, welcome back to the Diesel Podcast. I had a blast chatting with you before about 68 RFEs, all the cool things you guys are working on. And then we're chatting a little bit, you know, before the podcast, and you're like, hey, we got some other really cool stuff for racing and turbo 448RE stuff. So I'm definitely looking forward to learning more and seeing what you guys got cooking there.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having us back. We love to talk about transmissions every day.
Well, one of the things, you know, when I think of racing is just the power and the levels that they keep reaching is insane. And the next thing I think about is, okay, what's putting it to the ground? So I wanted to ask you, you know, if you could give some of our listeners like a background on like the 48RE and how it has withstood up to higher power levels, but why some guys are running turbo 400s, what that gives them, and then you know, some things that you guys are working on to be able to bridge the gap between both, or you know, offer them solutions for one or the other.
Yeah, sure. I can't really remember what year it was. I think it was like 2015. We had some we had an encounter with John Gilbert, owner of Stainless Diesel. He has a Pro Street truck. It was really when the Pro Street like started to kick off, like with the common rail stuff. And we got into his transmission program, and he really tested our ability like to the wit's end. You know, we had done some high horsepower stuff and had a really good setup. But when you go from like, say, like, well, 1200 horsepower back then was huge, to what he was doing was close to 1600 to 1700, but it was at 5,400 pounds. We started seeing the weak links. Every day we, you know, went back to the drawing board and found little things to help us progress. You know, like fast back then was, you know, mid fives. So we've definitely came a long ways. You know, we had a data acquisition on every single circuit, and that's how I learned what I needed to do to make things better. Like, you know, hey, is this clutch coming on fast enough? Is it taking too long? Do I need to open this orifice? Do I need to slow it down? And so when we had all that data that I could sit there and study after every pass, I mean, we went to every race with the Stainless Diesel crew before I started piloting the truck we built. You know, it was just purely like, that was all I concentrated on, was just transmissions, and did the data thing. And it helped us tremendously progress into what we are now, finding out, you know, like staging wise, a lot of people burn down a converter during staging. So we really concentrated on that. You know, we wanted to keep the biggest failure, in my opinion, of the 4748 in the race application is in the torque converter. We can all pretty much get them to hold like with the hard parts that are available to, you know, us nowadays. Sonex with all their shafts, like we swear by their shafts. They're actually one of our sponsors for our race program, and we test a lot of their stuff for them. It was the converters that we really had to look into. And there's guys going out making two passes and switching out converters. So I studied that, you know, while I was sleeping even. And we got to the point where, you know, he had spooled up against some other people that were having troubles we knew prior to, and he would sit there on the limiter for 20, 30 seconds, you know, and I'm like, oh God. And he'd get back to the pits and I'd put my hand on the pan and, you know, it was you could leave your hand on the pan. So we had a really, really good idea of what we needed for pressure wise. You know, how do we keep this lockup clutch from dragging? We took that on to, I think it was 2018. He was at that 2,500 horsepower mark, and we came to some case limitations. So the actual roller race was starting to rip out of the cases at that point. So, you know, it wasn't super common. He was one of the first four-wheel drive turbo 400s. We did his transmission for that. It was a huge learning. And I tell the story to a lot of my friends that are in transmission building and said, you know, I wasn't really excited to open my arms to the turbo 400. And they're like, man, why not? You know, it's a really simple trans, and you know, it's a proven platform. And I was like, well, that's the thing. I said, it's been out for so long, you know, how much is there really to study and upgrade? I feel like I could just open a recipe book and, you know, make KFC's secret recipe. And it's not the case. Like, there was so much more. And I think it was, you know, the generation gap of the older generations were in the turbo 400s. They're super smart people. I had one of the smartest turbo 400 power glide guys that made like the first Villa trans brake valve bodies and stuff local to me, and Steve Griner. So we have like a lot of that stuff that progressed the turbo 400 and the power glide, but it was still lacking of a lot of things. The lockup units were kind of newer. I mean, they weren't new, but they weren't what they are now. So we had no idea, like, where do you set charge pressure? What is charge pressure? Why are we monitoring this, you know? And so I remember, like, the first pass, we're like, man, you know, it's just about as fast as where we were, but I feel like it's slipping through the converter, you know? And so we started, like, digging into data logs, which I love data, you know? Anything about transmissions, I can put a port on every single clutch circuit, I do it. And if it takes me to, you know, machine it in our mill or something to channel it to a port to be able to put some type of pressure port in there, we absolutely do, because we can't learn anything without that data. And it's not necessarily like we're looking for a pressure, but maybe like a pressure rise at the time of when I push the button, how long is it taking to get there? And then from that point, you know, how long is it taking to actually make the movement in the chassis? And we can actually adjust that when you're dealing with, you know, low 5 seconds to high 4 seconds in an 8th mile pass, every half a second is huge. So dialing those things into, like, you know, tenths of a second was super, super important. And we can only do that with our data acquisition. So the Turbo 400 is a super big learning curve. It's an amazing unit. There's still things that I do feel like can progress with the Turbo 400. We did some really crazy stuff with lockup circuitry in it. I believe we're still one of the only ones that has a accumulated lockup circuit. So, and we used a 5-disc Suncoast lockup torque converter. And when it would lock, it was only 0.2 seconds from actual verse command. And you could watch it on the shock travel sensors and the G meter. And when Johnny told us that, it felt like he got smacked in the back of the head with a 2x4, When we looked at the data, it sure did. It was amazing. I was like, holy cow. And, it wasn't till like a couple of years ago, he had a vision of going into a promo. And, he worked at that and worked at that. And so, that was always on our minds, hey, we're going to go into a lighter chassis, same type of trans, see what we could upgrade. Well, we knew that that lockup circuit itself, in a car that weighed, say 2,500 pounds would be catastrophic if it hit that hard. So I started engineering like a different lockup circuitry, and we started testing it in the truck. And luckily, my first try, we hit it right on the head. When we would hit the lockup on the converter, it would take about 3/4 of a second from actual versus commanded. And on our data, we would watch RPM drop. So, like most of the time, you watch us racers, we want to be like way up in that RPM and fat, dumb, happy RPM. Because if we get down around that 3,800 RPM, that's peak power. Peak power is when you see videos like Sean Bocco where your motor exits the frame rail. We don't want that. That's where it makes all of its oomph. So we try to keep it right above that, maybe bring it down to 4,500, back up to 5,500, and stay within like 1,000 RPM gap. As to where when we didn't have an accumulated lockup, it would drop close to like 1,400 to 1,600 RPMs on the shift, which brought us down into that danger zone. And we definitely didn't want that. It's not good on the motor, and it definitely wasn't good on the chassis watching it. And so when we did it, we ended up doing a 3/4 of a second RPM slope instead of a straight drop down. And it only dropped 600 RPM because it slowly engaged that clutch and brought it back up. And so we did that mechanically instead of having to pulse within, say, like a lockup solenoid, which we had as a backup in that circuit. I didn't make it to where we could, pulse voltages and certain hertz that would like regulate on off and like bleed fluid in slow to create, it to lock up slower. So we definitely have done a lot of crazy one-off stuff, and I enjoy it so much. It takes so much time, but it's so much fun. I'll go for days after hours and just, start whittling on brand new billet pieces, and making it something. So it's super cool. The Turbo 400 is super common in 2,000 horsepower up range. I've always had it in my head that we can make, the 47, 48 be that. We still are, like our race program ourselves, we still are in that 47, 48 RE range right now. We do have plans to go 68 for probably a couple races just to prove a point on it. And then we'll have another, our test truck that will stay with the 68 all season, and it will be at the ODSS races this year. So that'll be super cool. One of our staff members will probably pilot that one.
Well, there's so many trucks nowadays that can hit 2,000 plus horsepower, and I imagine in that, they get to that point where they've got to decide, am I going to stick with the 48 RE or go the Turbo 400 route? What's the biggest benefit that you get by going with the Turbo 400? Is it reliability? Is it more passes? Is it things that you can control, or like the RPM drop that you were mentioning? What are the big benefits to going that route?
The biggest benefit that was the persuading factor, I think, for most of us early in the stages, was the converter life. So, the converter life of the 47, 48, we personally didn't fight that. We had some case limitations, but I can tell you that most of the racers did. And so, their big persuasion was that Turbo 400 lockup circuitry. It gets kind of confusing if you don't know how like a torque converter works, but it adds another passage into the lockup circuit. And that lockup clutch is completely separated from anything basically in the torque converter. As to where 4748RE, it has some valves and it shuttles fluid to keep that lockup piston off during spool up or unlocked conditions. And then what it does is it dumps the fluid behind it and presses that plate and allows it to lock up. So imagine during spool up, your balance of your oils holding off on the clutch versus what's coming into your torque converter and being multiplied with the heat expansion, it starts becoming worse and worse and worse. So it starts to drag your lockup clutch on during spooling and staging. And as you know, if you drag a clutch that's not meant to be on, it builds heat and it also takes material off and, you know, bad things happen. So the big push was, you know, hey, we need what they call a captive clutch, which is a three circuit style torque converter. That's, we can sit on that torque converter for a minute straight and all we do is smoke the fluid. We don't try to drag a lockup clutch. You know, that was the huge benefit of the Turbo 400. Ours was wanting the gear ratio. So you can put about any gear ratio you want in a Turbo 400. So like your first, second gear ratio can be completely changed however you want it. If you want a big jump from first to second, you want what they call a close ratio from first to second. And gear ratio is a huge thing with the diesel torque. So getting the availability to change the ratios was a big thing on top of, you know, it was proven. Like you see these pro mods, they claim, you know, 5,000 horsepower pro mods. They go out there, they, you know, they put a Turbo 400 in there for a season. They don't touch it, whatever, you know. And we're like, well, you know, if they are able to do that, we should be able to do that. And for the most part, I mean, they are really, really reliable transmissions. They're not cheap. It's a completely custom, you know, from the back of the engine to the starter, to the flex plate, to the bell housing, to, you know, buying just the unit. It doesn't come with the bell housing. You know, then you got a torque converter that's anywhere from $7,000 to $10,000. Then you have a custom billet transfer case. That's another $5,000. You know, it really adds up super quick. It prices them out. It prices most of the customers out of it, honestly, which sucks. Because it is a great unit to have. It's super simple. It's meant for what we're doing. And the gear ratios are amazing. The 4748 is getting there. I mean, I feel like it already should have been there, for how old it is, but it's, you know, we haven't been making 2000 horsepower for a whole long time. You know, getting to that 15 to 1700 horsepower was like, holy cow, this is amazing. And I felt like every year we all gained some crazy amount of horsepower through the winter, you know, like, I keep telling myself, you know, we can't go any faster. Like we're, you know, as a diesel community, like we're tapped out. Like, what can we do? You know, and it seems like we all come together, and in the springtime, we all just, I don't know, just pull it out of our hat and make it happen. It's amazing. You know, the gas guys even nowadays are like, that thing's a diesel. It's like, yeah. And they're like, man, I remember when those things, you know, just used to blow smoke, and they were like, you know, 2 seconds behind us, and now we're like really worried. You know, we got Ryan Milliken out here setting, you know, mile per hour records in, you know, 275X class, which is awesome. You know, so we got people in the radio world. We kind of do the no prep street stuff in our truck, and I feel like the diesel scene is definitely getting its spotlight right now, and I feel like every year we're keeping up, we're gaining traction, we're getting there to be the top competitors. And it's so awesome to see, because when we started it out, it wasn't like that. You know, we were trying to blow ourselves up with propane back then, you know, which isn't even a thing anymore. It's all nitrous. So yeah, it's definitely cool to see like how we evolved, going from truck pulling to drag racing, and seeing what we've done differently, and You know, even going back to when, you know, like LaVon and Johnny were running triple turbos, like everybody thought that was the thing. Like that's what we need. We need all that power and torque. You know, we need to get that thing good moving down the track. And really, it was the absolute opposite of what we needed. We needed our turbos in a bottle and one turbo just to be there to keep, you know, the air circulation going in the right direction. I mean, we shoot so much nitrous in these things, it's insane. So learning our limitations of that has been really cool. We spent, as a diesel community, we've spent thousands of dollars blowing up engines, trying to see what works. But it's got to where we are now, which is awesome.
For the guys that are out there that maybe aren't, they're not ready to go that turbo 400 route, how, or what kind of things can you do to a 48 to maybe bridge the gap, you know, for them right now till they are ready to invest that kind of money into this custom transmission, transfer case, bell housing, starter, you know, everything else? Is there, are there options for them? Like, because it really interests me as I think of, you know, trying to go that fast, and if all the money you're spending on the engine, the injectors, the chassis, the body, the time, everything else, you've really got to maximize the budget. And I think there's a lot of those guys out there that, you know, are looking for something they can, you know, use with their 48 now, or an idea, or a kind of path to you know, keep it in the truck and still go fast.
Mm-hmm. So we have been working on I call it the Frankenflight. So I've been working on this thing for like, God, it's been like since 2018, 19 era. And what I did basically was I made a 47, 48RE into a captive clutch. So I took our biggest failure point as a group and said, okay, what can, you know, as we progress and getting faster, we need a lot of things in our torque converter area. Something we call charge pressure, which we can adjust charge pressure to basically slow down the efficiency or take efficiency out of the torque converter. So kind of like we would make the converter slip more per se to get out of the hole on slicker surfaces or something that wasn't prepped good enough, or we wanted to leave harder and ease the power in. We could watch charge pressure. And so this Frankenflight that I designed is a three passage lockup converter feed and drain. So those are the three passages that we have. So it like feeds the stator. And then once it does its torque multiplication, you know, it drains back through. And when it drains back through, we take a pressure reading. The higher the pressure, the more efficient that torque converter is. So the more it's wanting to go. The lower the pressure, the less efficient it is. So you would have to say if you're at 1,000 RPMs and it's at 5 pounds, if you went to 2,000 RPMs, it would gain to say 30 pounds. It's wanting to drive. So that charge pressure, we play with a ton in the drag racing scene. It was a big thing that the 47, 48 lacked of. And if you had a lockup style, now there was a non-lockup style out there that was floating around that had some charge pressure dump valves and stuff like that to do the same thing, but you lose lockup. We didn't want to lose lockup. That's a huge deal for us. You know, it's like from what our data shows, it's about 10% power loss. So you would have to add 10% more power to get the same like eighth mile time per se, because you would be throwing 10% of your power out the window. So you need to gain that back. You lose mile per hour and you gain it with power, basically. We didn't want to do that. We wanted to try to keep the lockup. So we designed that three style converter, and it's still like it's completely working. The converter that we do have for it that is working is way too tight. And everything's custom one off. And each time we have to try to change something, it takes 8 to 9 months. It's just, it's kind of one of them projects where it's not priority on the list. It's kind of Your customer base isn't really huge, which makes it super hard to devote time to. The only reason I devoted as much time as I have is because I want it personally for myself, just to prove that it can do it and it can be up there with the Turbo 400. The 4748RE hard parts are amazingly big. They are about double the size of the internals of a Turbo 400. It definitely has the platform to do what we need it to do. It's just there's a lot of like just case machining, redesigning the front pump, the valve body area was crazy. I had to plug off ports, add new ports inside the case. Like it was every time somebody tells me something's impossible, I definitely don't stop and I'll figure it out until it's done. And that was kind of what somebody had said to me was, "Hey, you can't do that. Like, it's impossible to make a 4748RE a captive clutch." And I'm like, sitting there brainstorming as they're telling me that. I'm like, okay. And I made it happen. I mean, it's definitely a thing. I have some spool test. I was trying to get it to come up with some nitrous in the last converter revision, and it's just stuck. It's like the stators is actually landed in the company that we're dealing with now that has a software that can actually scan it, and it's called as I think it's a CDS or CSD, a CDS program. So what they do is they scan like your converter and they actually flow it like in a software. It's almost like SolidWorks for torque converters. So it can tell you like how much pressure, what should the stall rate be? Where's the efficiency going to be at when it is at its highest efficiency factor? It's super, super cool software. And I think there's about two people in the United States that have it from what I understand. So happens one of them is a friend of mine. And they're mapping out a setup for us right now to be able to get it back in the truck, hopefully beginning early of the season, and really get some data on this thing. If we can get it to spool up, we're on the road, we're ready to go. It's going to be that whole game of, hey, is lockup happening too fast? Is it too rough? Is the lockup clutch needing more pressure? So it's so rate it's so the lockup circuit is so out of the system that I could literally put, say, like regulated nitrous pressure and lock the converter up. Like that's how far away it is from anything in the torque converter. It's completely sealed off. No matter how long you sit on the torque converter, how much heat you build, it will never drag the lockup clutch unless it's closed and it has some sort of force to go through the input shaft and apply it. So it's super, super awesome. It has been a lot of money, a lot of failures, and a lot of time, but I do know that it is working. We fought pressure issues in the pump forever. We finally got that figured out. It took a lot of pulling apart, machining, putting back together, scrapping parts. But we definitely did get that figured out. It was like we're trying to add another circuit to it and redirect fluid. And say, you add a bleed off on it, you come to the fact of like that pump was designed to do what it does, and now you're adding more things for it to do. We're running out of volume. So where can we take volume from? Where can we add volume? Like, where can we take from and give to? So that balance of figuring that out was the challenge. Redirecting, redesigning like front pump assembly and valve body, it wasn't terrible. If I had a better machining background, I probably would have been a lot faster at it, but I went through a couple $300 end mills breaking off and stuff like that. Live and learn, but we definitely got it. It's sitting right beside my transbench. I look at it every day just waiting for a torque converter, so can't wait to put it back in that thing.
What's really interesting to hear about the development and the process that you went through with the 48 and the Turbo 400 stuff and the ingenuity with it, is I see a ton of things you guys are doing with 68 RFEs, and that transmission has had its own evolution from it's great, you know, now RAM has a 6-speed instead of a 4-speed, it's awesome, then it sucks, then it can't hold power, then it holds a little power, and, you know, the engine's always kind of outpacing what the transmission can do with it, and there's so many of those trucks that are on the road, and so many people who, you know, even if they're just doing tuning, intake, towing heavy, they're putting strain on something that it seems like it's just built to handle whatever the factory rating is. There isn't that big kind of leeway that you get, say, with like Ford transmissions or some of the Allisons out there where, you know, you can push them 150, 200 horsepower above what they're, you know, comfort from the factory. So with the 68 stuff, you know, what are some cool things or new things that you guys are working on to be able to take that same ingenuity on the 4-speeds and the turbo 400 stuff to give these guys that just need more capability out of their 68?
Some things I can't really talk about that will be coming out very soon. I can say, like, kind of hinting towards some things that are coming out. We do have a full-blown ratchet shifter in our shop truck. I got that all set up about 3 weeks ago. I think we got, you know, a precision ratchet shifter, made our own bracketry and stuff, and got ratchet shifting set up in the truck for the 68 RFE. We came to the fact that we aren't tuners. We want the trans to do something that we want when we want, and we can't change that as people like in our team. So we're actually this week we designed a lockup solenoid. So we have a lockup solenoid. We kind of released our prototype yesterday on social media. The problem we're running into at full throttle, we're not getting 100% lockup. No matter what we're commanding it, it's still not wanting to do 100% like full locked shifts and stuff like that. Maybe it's a good thing. We're about to find out, because I promise you it will go 100% lockup. It will not pulse width regardless of what the computer says. But what's really cool about how we did it was, you know, I always want to make it like as tune free as possible, right? So we don't want to have special tuning required to run this modification. We want full control over it when we want control over it. So that being said, like, sure, we could have went in and interrupted the lockup circuit and made it, you had to lock it up if you wanted lockup every time it shifts, right? But instead, we designed it to where if you didn't want to flip your switch and have, like, you know, a full lock shift all the way from, I mean, it will do it in first. Don't do it in first because it will break everything. But from, say, like second to sixth gear, if you want a locked shift, it's 100% locked up. There is no questions to it. You can absolutely flip your switch and it will do it. If you're cruising through town with your kids and you want the factory ECM to lock it up, don't flip your switch. It'll operate as factory. So that, I mean, what is it today? Wednesday. So we had the module done on Friday last week, and we got it mounted to the valve body late last night. And today it's, I think actually currently I hear it in the background running. So it's getting ready to go out on a test drive and have some full lock shifts with that setup. We have confirmed that it will do a full lock shift. It took some custom tuning because it was seeing things it didn't want to see in circuits. So that helped us design what we needed to know to make sure the ECM doesn't know that it's actually got locked converter when it's not asking for it. So that took a little bit of time. So you got to have like a little bit of engineering with electronically, and then you got to know mechanically, like hydraulically, how are we going to do it? So it's, if you don't know both of those things, it becomes very hard. You can be really good at electronics, but don't understand how fluid dynamics work, or you can be really good at fluid dynamics work, how they work, and don't know a dang thing about electronics, but you have to know both of them this day and age, because you got to fool both of them. So if you do one thing, you're like, okay, well, it's like, well, there's a pressure switch on down line. And if I override this circuit and put fluid there, it's going to see it in this pressure switch. which throws a check engine light and throws it in the limp mode. And then you got people calling, or you're having to do a custom tuning revision. So it's not easy. we have to go through and study. I mean, I think we pretty much got every circuit memorized by now, 68 channel plate and pump assembly. It's been many hours of studying to get what we wanted. And we still have hydraulic fluid flow diagrams pulled up when we do stuff, just to make sure we are on the right track. Cause there's so much that goes through your head to design something. Just so something that seems so small in your head is something so huge in the end. It sends you down this huge rabbit hole. But each one of these things like that we're doing, you know, we talked about the low reverse clutch on throughout first year, getting that timing down from, you know, your low reverse clutch coming off to your 2C clutch coming on for second, was all these are stepping stones to where we want to be in the end. Having, you know, the capabilities of doing full lock shifts. What are we going to break? Where's the weak points? What are we going to see fail? You know, that's the only way we're ever going to progress these transmissions, is to get them in those guys that are 1,000 to 1,500 horsepower full weight, and being able to find these weak links. So we as companies can say, okay, this will be a demand, you know, as emissions on tuning grows and we're say 1,000 horsepower with DPFs on, and we're making these torque monsters of a truck. Like, what are we doing for transmissions then? We have to be able to test them now and get those failure points down to where we can say, okay, well, this is something that, you know, is worth investing time into. We need to, you know, build a billet output shaft, which they're, I think RevMax is actually working on a 68 RFE billet output shaft. You know, we have to start breaking these things more and more as a company and as, like, you know, people that we deal with every day, to actually get it to evolve to say like the 4748 platform where everybody wants to run it because it's reliable. It'll hold 2000 horsepower pretty easy. And, you know, it just flat out works. To get the 68 that way, it hasn't been like, oh, okay, that looks like a weak link. No, it's been like, okay, that thing just shattered. And this case is completely trash and we need to start over. Don't we need to fix that? You know, but like as racers, we understand it. You know, that's how we have progressed. We've blown blocks completely in half. We've, you know, I mean, just completely destroyed things. And we found out why. And, you know, that's how the deck plate engine evolved. You know, it's like, now everybody and their brother has a deck plate engine. Now we're going to aluminum engines. I can tell you right now, the aluminum engines weren't what they should have been when they came out. You know, they are amazing units now. They've come so far in the racing world. You know, the failures that we used to see aren't even a thing anymore on the aluminum engine side. So, you know, I see a lot of people on our Facebook going, yeah, it's going to be this, just call it the shaft breaker 1000 and, you know, this and that. And it's like, well, you know, we kind of purposely, you know, want to put the strain on these things with full lock shifts. Where's the limitation at? Where can we tell people, hey, this thing needs to be at billet, you know, at this power level, this weight, you definitely cannot exceed this, you know, limitation. We're writing the book, you know, and without the book, you're kind of just shooting in the dark. So without these small stepping stones that we're doing, you know, we don't really know where our limitations are. And the 68's here to stay for a little bit, you know. It's in trucks that are from 2007 to current. It's not something that's going to be going away anytime soon. So the faster we get down to, you know, what's the weak link, where's its absolute breaking point, when can we not go any further, that's my vision with it, is where's it stop? You know, is it another 4748 RE? Possibly. Not with six gears, I can tell you that, but it's definitely very possible to be the next 4748 RE. It's not going to be easy, it's not going to be cheap, and it has taken, I would hate to see how many hours of studying this thing, but it's definitely it will be there. I have faith in it.
That's the part about the transmission side of the Diesel podcast that I love to follow and chat about, because you mentioned a lot of things there that are really true. I mean, we were just talking about a Turbo 400, and in 2023, people are running them. A 47, 48s, came out in the late, well, 47s in the, late 90s, and they're in race trucks now. And the 68's kind of the same thing. And so you have to think ahead with, what are people going to want? What are they going to need? And I like the approach of making things as tuneless as possible, because that was always an issue, because normally people would do tuning first, and then your transmission breaks, you want a transmission, and you have to change your tuning. And that whole side of the diesel industry has changed drastically. And so I think, what you can do as a builder, and with the unit itself, it just streamlines it, so well. And, the other part that you mentioned that I really, I was just thinking about that is so true, was about emissions on tuning. I think in the past of how things used to be with the newer trucks, and making 600, 700, 800 horsepower is pretty easy. And you go look for a built 68 RFE, and there's, these different levels where, if you run this, 1,000 horsepower unit or 900 or whatever it was rated for, maybe it's not good for daily driving. Maybe you're pushing that entry level one a little bit too far. And I think on the tuning side and the emissions on stuff, is it sort of reset it, and then now it's catching up so quick to where the trucks are making 600 horsepower, a little bit more, or maybe vastly more. I'm not sure with all these things on. So is it far-fetched to think in a few years they could be at 700 or 800 or 850? And like, you're investing the time into a 68 RFE and other transmissions. So when that happens, you guys are ready and it's there. It's not like you got to spend 5 years trying to figure it out, in the future, so you can really capitalize at that time.
Yeah, it's definitely you definitely have to look at the future and what I get a lot of messages about the AS69. I was joking with some of my trans buddies the other day, and they're like, "Man, what are you gonna do with me? You're done with the 68." I'm like, that's a good idea. I don't know where I'm going next. I don't know what I'm gonna like put all of my thought into. I don't know when I'll be done with it, honestly. Is it going to be a daisy chain? Is the whole thing going to be billet by the time I'm done? I don't know. I will know probably within the next year or so. But like the AS69, it's like, man, it's an awesome trans. The best I can explain it is, it's an Allison 1000 and a Dodge version. It's super slow shifting. It's very odd. Like, it's not consistent shifting. If you pulled your trailer for a week straight, it shifts really good. And then you go drive it to church, and it's going to be slamming gears until it learns it. And then it's going to start flaring shifts when you go back to pulling your trailer. And it's like without the tuning capabilities, which as of right now, the 69 has no tuning capabilities. We're relying, excuse me, on factory TCM calibrations. We're seeing trucks at 600 to 700 horse pretty fairly often. We've got drop-in turbos that are making 750 horsepower easily. Like until that tuning market opens up, unless somebody comes out with some sort of standalone TCM to start getting those shifts more consistent and stuff like that, we're at a standstill with it, really. I mean, we can make it as beefy as we want inside, but if we can't get it consistently shift evenly every time and learn faster and get those shifts nice and crisp and clean, and I mean, you're not going to want to drive around a truck that your buddy goes, "Hey, man, shifting okay?" It's like, "Oh yeah, no, it's fine." Programs it. Well, no, it's not. It's not how it's supposed to be, it's every time it does a flare shift, it's not good. Is that 69 going to stay around? I don't know. Like it's kind of a, this, the AS68 RC, which was like in cabin chassis trucks from the 6-7 start, so the 2007 to I think it was 2012 out of 68 RC RC AS R 68 RC. Like you don't even like we get calls maybe once every 3 months. Hey man, you build a 68? I'm like, yeah, we do tons of 68s. I'm like, oh, it's in a cab and chassis. It's like, nope, we don't. And I don't know if anybody is really doing any of those. The problem with it is you can't get any parts for them. And if you can get the parts for them, it's actually more expensive to buy the parts than it is to buy a reman unit from Mopar and throw it in the truck. So super weird. I just wonder if the 69 is going the same way. You know, it's not a super common trans. Do I want to spend my time on it? I don't know. Is it here to stay? You tell me. Like as a Dodge person, I would, if it's gonna be here to stay, sure, we'll dig in. We'll make it happen. But, I'm not sure if it is or not. I hear a lot of talk about, ZF coming in really soon and starting maybe an 8-speed or 10-speed style, like the Ford and Chevys went. Just hate to invest time into something that was a 3 or 4 year span, and you don't have that future. So it kind of sucks for the 69 guys. They were persuaded to go that heavy duty with a PTO option in the 69 RC, and a lot of them out there are great units. It's the people that don't have consistent driving habits. Hey, I'm pulling my boat to Tennessee. Yeah, it's probably going to shift a little goofy halfway there. By the time you're halfway there, it's probably going to be okay. If you can't put up with that, you probably ought to go with something else because the 69 is super slow, it seemed like, to learn. And there's super slow shifting. They'll never be made for power. It just, just kind of like I say, like the Allison. I'm sure there's been some guys out there that's been fairly fast with an Allison transmission. It's a lot of weight. It's a lot of rotating mass to start and stop. It's doable, but it's not ideal at all. It was like a dump truck transmission. I got one in my tow rig. I love it. I absolutely love that thing. It has 350,000 miles on the factory Allison 1000. It works great. It doesn't miss a beat. Great unit. It will never be that high horsepower, go fast style trains. It's just way good for what it is for, and that's it. So kind of looking at that 69 like the same way.
I was just thinking when you mentioned it is I see whenever we do a transmission episode, usually there's a comment on YouTube or Instagram or something where a guy has one of them and he says, "Hey, can you do an episode about what's out there?" And it's always been really tough because there isn't tuning for it. And then what you mentioned, it's in the specific models of trucks and how many of those are really pushing the power envelope or being turned into something that's going to the drag strip a lot. So then, you take yourself, you're going to pull yourself off of 68 development or, the 48 hybrid you talked about for the limited number that are out there. It's really tough. I've driven one. I mean, the way I've always thought about it, if I was just going to have a truck and leave it relatively stockish, I'd probably go with the ASIN route. But it's just really hard to kind of get the aftermarket going and invest the time into it because, like you said, is it going to be around or is there going to be an 8 or 10 speed here pretty soon? And then it's this, kind of short window with limited number of trucks out there. And I know it's tough, and guys that have those trucks don't want to hear that, but it's really tough when there's not a lot of support for it, and I understand why.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just think about like, one say like one unit that we concentrate on, we try to do, say, a lockup module. That can be six figures really fast, of development of time, material, money, failures, fixes. Like it's not cheap to go out and say, okay, I'm gonna wake up today and we're gonna do this. Well, it takes time. It takes a lot of money. And to invest in something, you have to know that it will be something that is wanted, or,
Yeah.
It's just not, it's as a, in a business aspect, it has to have a return on our investment or it's not worth our time. We could go to 10,000 other different things and invest time, you know? So that's kind of, I think, I feel like that's where that 69 sits. And it sucks to turn people away from us. We just, until we can open that void up, we can't, you know, we can do everything everybody else is doing, put some heavy duty parts in there, but it's not really fixing, in my opinion, the root problem. Sure, it'll, you know, it'll hold more power. It, you know, it'll probably last longer because of the added clutches and stuff like that. But, you know, excuse me, it's a controller issue that we have absolutely no control over. As of now, you know, maybe HP Tuners is working on that. I've heard through the grapevine that's a possibility. Once that's released, I feel like you're going to see a lot of people, you know, having a lot of cool stuff for the 69. It's just getting there. Little secret about the 69 is it is a captive clutch setup, and it's just like the Turbo 400 on the torque converter control. I mean, it's an awesome unit. So is a 6R140. Everybody's kind of going to that, you know, that style of lockup circuitry now. So it's definitely a beefy unit. It's got huge shafts. It's got really good planetaries. There were some things they, like you said earlier, you know, that I feel like they just said, okay, we're going to rate this like maybe 3 horsepower over what this truck actually makes. And so when they, if they make a, you know, put a can and air filter on, it's probably going to break there, but, you know, they'll be back. you know, there's always them little parts, you know, whether it's in a fuel system or a transmission or an engine, I feel like they always, the one engineer just throws that one little piece in there. So, I mean, you know, there's always going to be that, but I, like you said, you know, if you're using it as a workhorse, fairly stock, you know, I don't think it's a bad trance. It's just most people nowadays, they get a diesel and they're like, oh, I can get 600 horse out of this thing, like fairly easy. Like, well, yeah. Well, you know, that trans is probably has limitations, like on the way it learns and the way it shifts. And, you know, 600 horses is quite a bit for that trans. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure there's people going to be out there. Well, I've seen people with 1,000 horsepower. Absolutely. I'm not saying it can't be done. It's just not as easy or as common or as good as what it can be for sure.
I know there's, you guys do a really great job on social media posting updates and cool new things that you guys have. Where, and I definitely want to make sure people are listening that, you know, are interested in transmission, they go follow you guys. How do they find you guys on Instagram or, you know, your website to be able to see, you know, the new 68 stuff, or maybe they got questions. Like there was a listener that had messaged in that I connected with you guys about, you know, some things that he wanted, and I think it helps when they jump on your site or can message in, because you guys do an awesome job and just keeping us updated. And, you know, like I saw the Val Body stuff that you had mentioned, I go, oh, this is cool, I need to ask Ethan about that. I need to ask him about this and see what's going on with it.
Yep. So you know, Facebook is probably our current platform that we really are on a lot. That's probably more my fault. I'm a Facebook guy. We do have Instagram. They're all the WP developments. And don't forget the S at the end. If you want to email and talk to me, that's a great option. My computer screen is 65 inches. It's right by my build station. I check it very often throughout the day. It's almost about like texting me, honestly. my email is ethan@wp-developments.com. We also have like a sales at, and we have an info at. So there's plenty of emails you can get a hold of me or somebody on the crew. They'll get you redirected my way. And my cell phone number, you can call and text within business hours. If you message me after business hours, it'll probably be the following day or Monday if it's on weekend. But it is 765-586-0871, and that's the main line to get a hold of anybody here. So yeah, if we can help any of you out, if you have questions, email or text, or if you're interested in a product, we have a website. It is www.wp-developments.com. And it has most of our products on it. I won't say it has all of them on it. It takes so much time to load all that stuff and the prices, and we're so busy, and racing season seems so far away, but yet it's not, you know. So we have the motor completely out of the drag truck right now, and we're going aftermarket ECU and stuff like that. So we're super busy. Our free time is super busy. So refreshing everything, getting ready for the race season.
Well, it's always awesome to chat with you. And I really love the approach that you guys take as a company to providing transmission solutions. And it gives me hope for the future of, you know, thinking out 5 years or maybe even longer, what's going to be out there. So I think you guys are doing a really awesome job and providing, you know, a transmission platform, well, multiple ones that, you know, regardless of what power level we're at, there's going to be a solution for it. So I encourage everybody to, you know, follow you guys, check it out. I'm always doing it, and you guys release a ton of stuff and really cool things that I think are cutting edge in the transmission market. So keep it up, and I'll definitely you know, be looking forward to seeing what you guys release and like race season and everything else coming up here. I'm sure we'll chat again and talk about some more transmission stuff, and I'll definitely learn more and then have probably even more questions at the end of the episode than I did at the beginning.
Well, we really appreciate you guys as well, and we hope to be back sometime soon.
Don't forget, diesel fans, make sure and head on over to kershaw.kaiusa.com. Use code 20diesel for 20% off site wide. It's a great way to save some money on a knife, whether you need something for EDC or hunting, fishing, something around the house. They've got options for really any budget, or if you're an enthusiast and, you know, love different types of blade steels, handle materials, opening mechanisms, they've got something for everybody, and it's a great way to save some money on a really cool knife, some really quality gear. So we appreciate our friends over there offering that to you guys. Also want to give a shout out to some of our Patreon supporters, Tyler Lowen at 23 Diesel, Caleb, John, all of you who are on Patreon, follow us on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, podcast apps. We appreciate your support here in year 7. Look forward to being able to deliver a lot of really cool shows in 2023, and it's because of you guys. So keep the suggestions coming. You know, keep asking us questions. You know, let us know if there's a guest or topic you want. We thrive off of your guys' feedback, and look forward to bringing you some awesome podcasts here this year. Until next time, keep the shiny side up.